This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. Reporting from the streets of D.C., I'm Pete Tucker. As the Republican presidential primary continues to garner a great deal of media scrutiny, we turn to three lesser-known presidential candidates, Rocky Anderson, Roseanne Barr, and candidate Walmart, the first corporate person to run for the nation's highest office.
We are the first corporate, I am the first corporation ever to run for president, in the wake of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision where it said the corporations had the same right as other people. We decided that, it only made sense that we should actually have a corporation physically run for president.
In which political party?
Right now I'm running in the Republican Party, but, if I don't win that, which I will, obviously, but just in case, I'll probably run as an independent in the fall.
We'll also hear from actress and comedian Roseanne Barr, who's seeking the Green Party nomination for president.
I'm going to save millions of dollars, save thousands of lives. I'm going to fix every problem in the world because I have spent my life, 57 years, in prayer and meditation. And, I got the answers for some reason. I'm just a channel for truth and the higher gospel.
And we hear from Rocky Anderson, the former Salt Lake City mayor who's running for president on the Justice Party ticket.
Now, I just encourage everybody, get involved in the electoral system. I know we feel that we've been betrayed, that the system is broken, but if we're ever going to change this system, we need to come out, join together, organize like every other major social progress movement in this country, where they started at the grassroots, people organized and changed this country. We can do it again. We've seen it in our nation's history. We can't bow out of the electoral process. We have to join together and do whatever we can to change this corrupt, diseased system.
But before that, is D.C. a human rights city? In 2008, the D.C. Council declared the District of Columbia to be the first human rights city in the U.S. On the steps of the John A. Wilson Building, activists issued a 36-page report card which concluded, "The district has a long way to go toward achieving the promise of its declaration." But first, as district officials consider options for bringing the Washington football team back to D.C., we speak with sports and politics writer Dave Zirin on the costs of publicly financing a football stadium. Zirin concludes that dropping $1 billion in cash on a city from a plane would be doing more for the economy than building a stadium. We now turn to my interview with sports and politics writer Dave Zirin. Dave Zirin, recently there's been talk about the Washington football team coming back to play in Washington. And before we get to the advisability or not of stadiums and how they benefit folks who live in those areas, the Washington football team, that's how the local Pacifica radio station, WPFW, mm-hmm. refers to the team. Can you say something about the team's name?
Sure, the team's name, I don't think I'm shocking anybody, is the Redskins. It's the most racist name in sports. Its roots lie in the segregationist owner of the Washington football team, a gentleman by the name of George Preston Marshall. A statue of him is still in front of RFK Stadium, or I guess a bust of him is still in front of RFK Stadium. And its roots lie in the fact that the team used to be known as the Boston Braves before they moved to Washington. And when they moved to Washington, they were the southernmost team. And so it wasn't just that George Preston Marshall was a segregationist, which he was, and a white supremacist, which he was. The Washington team was the last team to integrate. It was also a commercial appeal to southern football fans because he thought he would have the southern market tied up and that the best way to do that would be by appealing to racism and minstrelsy.
Before we talk about the D.C., the possibility of bringing the Washington football team back to D.C., how do stadiums tend to work out for jurisdictions that put out massive public money to bring them in?
Well, you just said the key phrase, which is public money. And that's where you run into a disaster when it comes to stadiums. One economist put it very well. He said, if you flew a plane that had $1 billion of cash in it and just dumped it on a city and let people pick it up and spend it, you would be doing more for the economy of a city than you would by building a stadium. And the reasons are, I think, really obvious. I mean, you don't need an economics degree to figure this out. Football team plays 8 days a year. 8 days a year. So what other $1 billion public project would ever be of use 8 out of 365 days. And if you want to throw on a couple days for a concert or a playoff game, go right ahead. Still, its value relative to use is just ridiculous, because what happens is maybe some restaurants will sprout up around it and whatnot, but it becomes a ghost town when there's not a game there. So it's actually a tremendously inefficient way to spend tax dollars.
Ward 2 D.C. Councilmember Jack Evans, who chairs the Finance and Revenue Committee, recently said it's not a matter of if they come back, it's a matter of when, speaking of the Washington football team. And at the moment, it is not clear that any public subsidies are on the line. But when it comes to Evans, you have to look at the Washington National Stadium.
Sure.
He has a record of massive public subsidies for developments like this.
Yeah, I don't know why we would trust Jack Evans at this point. And you know what? This is one team that does not need any public subsidies, because Daniel Snyder is the owner of what was known as Jack Kent Cooke Stadium, now known as FedEx Field, out in Landover. He could sell that. And the Redskins, yeah, I say their name is so easily, it's even though they've been awful for so many years, haven't won a Super Bowl in 20 years, all the rest of it, I'm sure people are well familiar with their years and years of failure and mediocrity, even beyond all of that, the Redskins are still the second most valuable brand in all of professional sports. And that includes international sports, Manchester United, everything. It goes Cowboys and then the Washington team, one after the other. And so there is no reason why Daniel Snyder could not afford his own stadium. Or how, you know what would be great would be if he invested a lot of money into a refurb job into RFK. Because, I mean, that's I'm talking to Washingtonians, I mean, that's a great tragedy. The idea that the culture that existed around RFK on Sundays and the life that it brought to that part of D.C. is really no more. I mean, it was one of those, as much as Ben's Chili Bowl, it was one of those things that made Washington, Washington, his Sundays at RFK. And it's one of the reasons why the Washington football team, even with its racist name, is by far the most popular team among African Americans in Washington, D.C., by far. And Daniel Snyder is actually more popular with African Americans, according to a Washington Post poll, than any other group or whatever in the entire D.C. metro area. And the reason for that has to do with its roots at RFK, actually, which is interesting. And you see that when you go to a game. I mean, it's a lot of the tickets are discounted. It's very multiracial when you go to a game. And it would be good to have it back in D.C., but it would not be good to have us pay for it, because we'd be paying for it in schools, we'd be paying for it in libraries, we'd be paying for it in things that maybe we take for granted right now that would be no more because of the great sucking sound that is stadium money.
In 2010, Evans proposed tearing down RFK Stadium to build a new one. But can you talk about just a minute about the other Evans-inspired stadium, the Washington Nationals, how that has worked out for district residents?
Oh, it's been a disaster. And the crazy thing about it is that this was something that was foretold. I mean, it was unprecedented at the time. I mean, the idea of building a billion-dollar baseball stadium in advance of there even being an owner for that stadium, and then giving over the stadium to whoever happened to own it. And the family that bought it, the Lerners, I mean, they have just repeatedly disrespected Washington, D.C. They have most of their events in the Maryland and Virginia suburbs, like their fan events, their corporate events, et cetera. I mean, so they have nothing but disdain for the district itself. That's what they're developers. And so their idea is they're out for the real estate, and they take no prisoners. And it was handed to them on a silver platter. And as far as what is it meant for the city, well, I mean, are libraries open any longer right now? Are the schools in any better shape? I mean, what have we really seen in the district? Instead, no, it's just been an engine of gentrification for that whole area. The people who were displaced, they didn't get their homes back when that stadium was built. I mean, so everything about that stadium at the time that was said that would be this great benefit and engine for the city was a lie. If anything, it's been just a strategic hamlet of gentrification. I mean, and no more, no less.
I've seen various numbers given for how much public dollars were put in, but nothing less than $600 million.
Yeah, $600 million I've seen, but I've seen the numbers go as high as over a billion. I mean, those numbers are out there too. And some of the money that the Lerners said that they would kick in, they actually refused to do so. I mean, they have been the most disloyal tenants ever in Washington, D.C., and it's a blight, unfortunately, which is too bad because I love baseball. as much as the next person. But if there was any family that could afford a stadium, it would be the Learners.
Looking at that, any final thoughts you have at the proposed stadium to be for the Washington football team?
Yeah, very basic one. If you're a billionaire, pay for your own damn stadium. But if you're taking public money, you should be prepared for us to make a demand for partial public ownership. There's no reason why public money should magically turn into private profit just because the magician Jack Evans waves his magic wand.
Green Bay Packers style, they're publicly owned?
Absolutely. That would be one way to do it. There are numerous models out there. I like the Packers model because it's voluntary. Because it's like fans of the sport are the people who pay in for it. And I think there's something good about that, because what you're paying for actually is for the stadium to not, and for the team as well, to not be, you know, threatened with being moved to another place. I mean, if you're a fan and you're buying into it, you're also paying for some of the proceeds, like in Green Bay, 60% of proceeds from the stadium going to charities in the area. And even beer is 50% cheaper. I mean, so all of these things are very nice things for the fan, very nice things for the community. And it's why in Green Bay, Lambeau Field and that team are actually a buoy that keeps the community afloat as opposed to a rock around the neck of the people in Green Bay.
Thanks so much, Dave Zirin.
Thank you so much, Pete.
That was sports and politics writer Dave Zirin, whose work can be found at edgeofsports.com. This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. We now turn to The Fight Back's recent interview with activists on the steps of the John A. Wilson Building. In 2008, the D.C. Council declared the District of Columbia to be the first human rights city in the U.S. A new 36-page report card looks at how well the district is living up to its commitment and concludes that the district has a long way to go toward achieving the promise of its declaration. Earlier this month, on a chilly morning outside the district building, I spoke with several report card contributors, including David Schwartzman, a Howard University professor and statehood Green Party activist, Anise Jenkins, executive director of Stand Up for Democracy, Jean-Louise Pita El Kambana with American Friends Service Committee, and Maya Abdul-Rahman. We now turn to my interview with them. Your name?
David Schwartzman.
And what brings you out on the steps of the John A. Wilson Building this chilly morning?
Well, I was in the original group to get D.C. to self-declare itself as a human rights city as part of the U.N. program. And we were proud that we were the first city in the United States to do so. But that meant that D.C. officially made a commitment to work to fulfill human rights, and not only political, but also social and economic. And so we decided in the continuations committee to put out a report, an annual report. It's now a little over 3 years since this self-declaration has occurred. So how well has the D.C. government done? In all the different areas, we looked at how much they have pushed for D.C. statehood and self-determination, that political human rights. How much have they done for economic and social rights? And we met, we worked very hard. Our report has a lot of documentation, and we invite the public to look at our report and read it, and of course, particularly organizations that are fighting for better life for everyone in the district. Now we have some good grades, and I'll go over the grades because I think this kind of encapsulates, summarizes, the status.
Did you give an overall grade?
No. No, we didn't. Let's start with the federal government. The federal government, we gave a grade of F, and that was based on no action to implement D.C. statehood, as well as continued underfunding of programs for basic human needs. For the district government...
Hold on. Anise Jenkins, do you agree with the grade of F for the federal government?
Absolutely. The federal government is failing, as it has continued to fail to recognize D.C. residents as American citizens. They are failing, and we're fighting them.
We're standing on Pennsylvania Avenue. Just right there is the White House. The other end is the U.S. Capitol. And here, it's kind of no man's land almost.
No man, no woman. But we're here. We're human beings, and nobody's recognizing that. We're human beings. We demand our rights. We demand to be recognized. Federal government is failing, and the district government has to stand up, too.
So what's the grade for the district government?
Well, promotion of self-determination stated a B+ we gave them.
All right.
B+. They've done pretty well.
They went to New Hampshire.
In March they passed a resolution that explicitly called for statehood, unanimous. The mayor has spoken out.
The mayor's gone to jail?
Yes, he went to civil disobedience, that's right, to protest congressional interference with our, you know, self-determination.
So what do you have to do to get an A on that?
What
would they have to do to get an A?
Well, my point of view there is that they need to. No, I think the district government needs to address all the other social and economic issues to empower the people, so they will rise up and really be more active to demand statehood. I think that's why we gave them a B+. Now, here's the, let me
give
you
a summary. There's a lot of grades here. Summarize if you can.
Let me just point to the best grades. Discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, we gave an A. Immigration rights, an A-. The one little failing is enforcing, protecting workers against wage theft. Now, here's the bad grades. The bad grades are poverty reduction and income equality to promote that. Welfare of children, F. Access to affordable housing and ending homelessness, F. Budgetary and tax priorities, D. And discrimination on the basis of race and gender, D. Now, the underlying, the basic reason that we gave these low grades is that while people may say that we're in a depression, a recession, and the district government had no power to do better, we dissent. We say, to the contrary, the district has resources that they could have better used. Since 2008, the council and mayor have cut over $200 million from low-income programs from their budget. Yet, the families earning over $200,000 in the district actually have a taxable income of approximately $8 billion. And yet, the top 5%, the top 1% of families are paying a rate, particularly the top 1%, the millionaires, are paying an overall tax rate that is equal to the poorest residents, while the working and middle class families are paying 9 to 10% of their income. The millionaires are paying a little less than 7%. They could do better. Another place they could have done better, the district government could have pushed for payments in lieu of taxes from the World Bank and IMF, and they've never done this. Like other communities, let me point out another area they could have done better.
Well, hold on. The point of inequality, yes. May, you were mentioning homeless children. But so talk about what give me your name and talk about what brings you out here.
Okay. My name is Maya Abdurrahman. I've been working on homelessness, and particularly child homelessness, youth homelessness in Washington, D.C. for quite a while now. It's almost been like 6 years. And every year, I do a general assessment, and I find that the conditions have even gotten worse than the year past. And despite our knowledge of the hardships and the economic situation, the projected budget decreases, which are budget revenues that are in the decrease, no one has yet to understand that that means there are children who are going to be left behind. DCPS does not do a very good job covering or protecting the rights of homeless children. They are doing a better job today than they did before. There are not enough family shelter housing. I mean, it's just, and I just can't stand it. Now, these kids want to go to school. It's the safest place for them. It's safer than being outside in the streets. It's safer than being in the shelters. That's where they want to be. But our city so far has not offered anything and has not really protected them. There are no real services. They're taking the money, but there are no real services that address their needs. But thank you for asking.
Really, your name?
I'm Jean-Louis Ikambano.
And what brings you outside on this chilly day? And is D.C. a human rights city?
Well, D.C. is a human rights city according to a resolution passed by City Council in 2008. And the reason for why I'm here is because our city made a commitment, you know, to be a standard. Actually, we can be a model for the whole country. When the city was declared a human rights city, it was the first ever city in the United States to declare itself a human right. There are 17 other human rights cities around the world, and this one is the first in the United States. By making that commitment, I believe what our city wanted to convey, a message that our city wanted to convey, is that they will make a commitment to do their best to live by those standards. And obviously, we're not here to criticize them. What we're just saying is that can we work harder in really achieving this goal of having our city become like the beacon for the whole country, looking at human rights as a way of life. We're not looking at human rights from a legal perspective. We're looking at human rights as a way of life where everybody will come together, discuss issues that are affecting the resident, and find solutions. Before I came here to this great city, I'm originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I really never imagined that I would come to this great country and be working on human rights issues. It really hurt me to see that this country that promotes human rights all over the world is not living to the same standards right here. That's why I'm here, and I hope that we'll work with the city council, with our mayor, to promote human rights in Washington, D.C.
One of the big issues affecting district residents is that it's hard to remain a district resident. Gentrification is pushing a lot of people out. Is that something you looked at in the report?
Yeah, we did look at it. My portion of the report was really about the human rights education, because when the resolution was passed, the resolution states that grassroots organizations like ours, the American Friends Service Committee, will be teaming up with the school district to expand human rights learning among our young people. And this is what the American Friends Service Committee has been doing since 2008. Yeah, we have been doing this since without any support from our government, from our Office of Human Rights, and that's what our contribution was all about in the report. Gentrification, yes, it is a big issue. I'm telling you, for somebody who came here from a country where human rights violation are things that we see on a daily basis, I was really shocked to see that DC residents were being pushed out of their houses because of financial issues to go and live in somewhere else's. I was seeing people in front of my own office, you know, looking, seeking shelter. I said, what is this? Am I back home or I'm in Washington, D.C.? So that's a big issue. I don't know if somebody else can talk specifically to that issue, but yes, it is an issue we're looking at in our report.
Anise Jenkins, you're giving this report on the steps of the John A. Wilson Building, the seat of government for the district government. But even if D.C. did everything it could, it still wouldn't be enough in the sense that statehood needs to be given from the powers that be. Can you just take a second to explain what D.C.'s status is?
D.C. is considered a territory. However, it has even less rights than Guam and Puerto Rico because we still pay federal taxes, whereas the other territories don't. So we are a unique and unfortunately unique place to live. Right now, all that we're talking about, we can make all the progress in the world. We can satisfy child hunger, homelessness, gentrification. We can pass any law that we want. And the Congress, our democratically elected council, can agree to everything. They can pass everything. And then it has to go to Congress. Congress can overrule anything. Our local budget, even though it's approved by our local council, goes to Congress for a 30-day layover, and Congress can strike it down. Right now, we have Congressman Issa, who is acting as an overseer of a plantation.
He's from California.
He's from California, and he decides for D.C. residents what's good for us. And a lot of times, the Congress does these things because they're running at home on the backs of D.C. residents. Until we get statehood, nothing is permanent, nothing is solved. And I think it's very important that organizations, that our council, that our delegate educate D.C. residents and tell them the truth. You know, this is almost a sham. The D.C. government is almost working it's some kind of illusion. It's really not a real government until we have statehood.
David Schwartzman, you have any final thoughts you care to share?
Yes. I think that the main thrust of our report is to open up a dialogue. We're not claiming that all our grades are perfect. We're not claiming that we have the best recommendations. We want to open this up to a dialogue and discussion and provoke a movement to fulfillment of human rights. And this must involve many organizations, Fair Budget, One DC, Empower DC, Returning Citizens, and many other organizations and individuals in the community that do take human rights very seriously. And we're confident that our elected government will respond if we create a strong enough movement to make that possible.
Thank you, guys. That was David Schwartzman, Anise Jenkins, Jean-Louis Pita Ilkambana, and Maya Abdul-Rahman, all contributors to D.C.'s Human Rights City report card. This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. When we return, we'll be speaking with three lesser-known presidential candidates.
The people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, to ordain this Constitution of the United States, are all lies when it comes to the poor.
This thing has got me fiending. He's barely breathing and he's bleeding, but he's far from leaving. His body's sinking in the semen, gotta get him treatment. Ambulance so fast, we gotta track to MD, cause he got no cash. They shut down the general to the poor populace. It's obvious politicians are worried about their pockets in the meantime. My man is losing his life, telling me his last words to his kids and his wife. I'm screaming inside, but I can't let go. Wanna walk up the stairs to Manuel Williams' front door and drop my friend off so we can both watch him bleed right there on his porch. The leader of D.C., yeah, it makes me laugh. He's a puppet for Congress. Public hospitals aren't supposed to make a profit. It's nonsense. You shut your own people out. Let's resurrect the general. The time is now.
Come on. These are organized.
If you're rich, you don't need insurance.
We cannot be content with saying that we're fighting the right fight.
We the poor built America.
These are organized.
If you're rich, you don't need insurance.
We cannot be content with saying that we're fighting the right fight.
Reporting to you live from the free world capital, where the citizens can't even vote. How does that happen? National security interests override. Constituents pushed aside, not even strapped in for the ride. DC's a gangster. The buck stops here, kids die from gunshots here. The hospitals don't care. If you don't got insurance, there's no insurance. You'll be hurried in a gurney if you catch a bullet. They mean to privatize every section of our private lives until the divide is too wide to stride. You know the feds are in tune, dissecting rap tunes from street slang. Tomorrow's terrorists will be yesterday's street gangs. They got money for the world's most expensive missiles, but no money to fund DC General. What kind of scam you're running? The city's government funded, but there's no clinic to receive the home front's incoming.
These are organized.
If you're rich, you don't need insurance.
We cannot be content with saying that we're fighting the right fight.
We the poor built America.
These are organized.
If you're rich,
military industrial complex, the most profitable industry in America, followed closely by hospitals. Pharmaceutical companies are the kingpins in your town, monopolizing medicines to gain a larger
crown. It's time for Congress to elect a new plan, make DC an example for national health care, socialize the medical industrial complex, stop spending billions with Lockheed and Martin.
This is for my trash men and bellhops, the central cell blocks, taxi drivers, those with menial shell shops.
For all my blue collar workers, life's a pressure cooker, know the lab got you covered like a burqa.
This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org, broadcasting here on WEACT Radio, WPWC 1480 AM. As the Republican presidential primary continues to garner a great deal of media scrutiny, we turn to three lesser-known presidential candidates, Rocky Anderson, Roseanne Barr, and candidate Walmart, the first corporate person to run for the nation's highest office. The Supreme Court's Citizen United ruling determined that corporations are people and entitled to constitutional rights like free speech, thus allowing corporations to spend unlimited amounts to influence political campaigns. In the wake of the Citizens United ruling, one corporate person has stepped forward as a presidential candidate. Candidate Walmart says he's competing in the Republican primary, where his opponents are too middle of the road. Any of their promises, I can outdo them, he told The Fight Back. We now turn to my interview with candidate Walmart. Your name?
My name is candidate Walmart. I'm running for president, first corporation ever to run for president.
When did you announce?
I think we announced December 15th. In the run-up to the Republican debate, we decided that we wanted to, participate in the debates, and so that's why we did that.
So you're a corporate person?
We are the first corporate. I am the first corporation ever to run for president. In the wake of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, where it said that corporations had the same right as other people. We decided that, it only made sense that we should actually have a corporation run for president.
In which political party?
Right now I'm running in the Republican Party, but, if I don't win that, which I will, obviously, but just in case, I'll probably run as an independent in the fall.
And that kind of a slap in the face to Democrats. I mean, here in D.C., it's a Democratic city, and yet we're looking at six Walmarts coming in. I mean, congratulations. That's a huge accomplishment.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, the reason that we're not running as a Democrat is, it seems like Obama's going to get the nomination. So we figured we'd concentrate our efforts on, where the nomination was open. We're very strategic, obviously, in our, where we go after. But, Democrats are welcome to vote for us, as are Republicans and Independents and Greens and Libertarians and anybody. We'll take anybody's vote.
I guess your chief opponent then would be Mitt Romney. And he said he doesn't care too much about rich people, which must have come as a sting to you.
That's right.
He also said he doesn't care too much about poor people, which means your workers.
Well, right. That's right. And the thing is, the thing that I have over Mitt Romney is that not only do I really not care, I actually create poor people every day with my low wages and shoddy benefits. So, really, I'm more Republican than any of the candidates. Any of their promises, I can outdo them. Newt Gingrich wants to get rid of child labor laws. I say get rid of all labor laws. You take any one of their promises, I can top it.
Speaking of Newt Gingrich, last time we spoke, you mentioned you were insulted when he called President Barack Obama the food stamp president.
Yes, that's because a large portion of my workforce are actually on public benefits. And so many of them can't afford the basic necessities, which means they have to get on food stamps. So I was insulted because I really am the food stamp corporation, and I could be the food stamp president. It's not Barack Obama, it's me.
How's your campaign going?
I'm out here in the freezing cold, talking to the people. It's going very, very well.
You think campaign contribution limits will be a problem to your expenditures?
Are you kidding me? The Walton family has more money. I'm not even going to answer that. It's so ludicrous.
Talk about your efforts here in D.C. Six stores coming in, a massive, and including in the region.
Right, well, that's another case of how money really, can get you anything accomplished. We put a lot of money into the political process, a lot of money into different elected officials, the mayor's campaign, and as a result, we're going to open six stores in the metro D.C. Area, which I think is a major accomplishment.
Walmart has been accused of using sweatshop labor for some of its products. Is this concerning to you?
I think we ought to be using sweatshop labor for all of our products, personally. I mean, I'm going to find out where we're not using sweatshop labor and change that up, because I want the most efficient, effective, product distribution line that there can be. And you really only get that with, like, child labor, slave labor, that kind of stuff.
A report out of New York City by the public advocate there said that they shouldn't allow Walmarts to come in, that it would be the Trojan horse of job creation, should not allow Walmarts to come in, because for every two jobs created, three jobs are destroyed. Your response?
Well, I mean, that really depends on how you define destroy. If by destroy you mean putting small businesses out of business, well, yeah, sure, we do that, but who doesn't? I mean, really, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and you got to just, if you believe in capitalism, you got to believe in our campaign. And, I don't know who this fellow in New York is, but, we plan to open stores there, and we will eventually. So,
any final thoughts you care to share? Candidate Walmart, the first corporate person to run for president of the United States.
Just remember, vote Walmart, vote early, vote often, and always, remember, low prices are awesome. So,
what do you think of unions?
I'm not aware of what that word means, but, I'll check it out sometime.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That was candidate Walmart, the first corporate person to run for president. We now turn to a piece that candidate Walmart probably doesn't want you to hear. Filmmaker Robert Greenwald and Brave New Foundation have created a series entitled, Who Are the 1%? Here's the piece on 1%er Rob Walton, chairman of Walmart.
Who's getting rich exploiting the 99%? Meet the worst of the 1%. Rob Walton, Chairman, Walmart, wealth, $21 billion. Rob Walton and the Walton family have more wealth than the bottom 30% of Americans combined. Yet Walmart pays the average sales associate just $8.81 an hour. Walmart workers use an estimated $1 billion in public health care because the company won't provide adequate insurance, even as it generates over $400 billion in annual revenue.
That was from Robert Greenwald and Brave New Foundation series on Who Are the 1%? We now turn to another presidential candidate. Actress and comedian Roseanne Barr is attempting to secure the Green Party nomination. Just 3 weeks into her campaign, one national poll has Barr at 6% in a three-way race with President Obama and Republican Mitt Romney. Mother's Day weekend 2010, I interviewed Barr just after she delivered a speech outside the White House. Stepping down from her soapbox, literally a box marked soap, Barr said she was trying to jumpstart the world into the golden age. Unconvinced that becoming head of state of just one country would be sufficient to bring Roseannearchy to the world, Barr declared, I'm running for joint president of the United States and prime minister of Israel. It's a twofer. Here's my 2010 interview with actress and comedian Roseanne Barr, now a candidate for president on the Green Party ticket. Roseanne Barr, yesterday and today you made a shocking announcement. You're not running for one but two
it's
heads
a
of state.
For, yes, and I have announced it on Pacifica Radio in L.A. where I do a show. They are gracious enough to allow me to come down there and rant whenever I want to on KPFK Tuesdays at 3. And that is where I announced it initially, plus my website, RoseanneWorld.com, where I, announced it about 5 years ago. No, 8 years ago, two elections ago. But I'm still running for it, and I decided to actually get up from the computer and run this time and physically go to the places and make the speeches. I'm running for joint president of the United States and prime minister of Israel. It's a twofer. It's of great value. I'm going to save millions of dollars, save thousands of lives. I'm going to fix every problem in the world because I have spent my life, 57 years, in prayer and meditation and, I got the answers for some reason. I'm just a channel for truth and the higher gospel of my new religion. I can't really be in any, I'm a Jew, but I can't really any longer support anything about blood cults and stuff because it's just kind of, also I feel like any book that says kill gays or burn witches, I can't go there no more. It's irrelevant. So I'm starting a new religion for thinkers, and it's called the Church of Common Sense. And, it's based on solutions to problems, which, like solutions, and we seek solutions everywhere, including the world's wisdom literature, if it ever says anything good, which you got to sift through a lot of it to find something relevant or good. But there is something in there, so we do consult it on occasion, but mostly it's irrelevant. And it's like I'm trying to jumpstart the world into the golden age, because that's what I feel that all women my age, that's what we're here to do. And I'm, you know, also a Kabbalist, and that's kind of what the, you know, Kabbalah says, that the age of Aquarius is where the souls of women who first heard the 10 utterances of God on Mount Sinai are to be reborn to usher the entire planet into the new age. So I know I'm one of them because, you know, I'm doing it. Plus, I also know I used to be Cleopatra. I was Cleopatra in a former life. No matter what any of these other waitresses out here say, and they're all saying they're Cleopatra, but they're not. I was, though, and I'm trying to rebirth the spirit of Cleopatra, too, because Cleopatra was a master of permaculture and of creating a city that actually worked for the benefit of all instead of the benefit of a few at the expense of many. She was a genius, and all we have to do is just copy what she did, and, you know, plus these other, like, 10 suggestions, the new kind of 10, I don't call them commandments, but 10 suggestions. And the world, nothing much has to change, and it will all run smooth, and it'll be heaven on earth for every child here.
Yesterday, I heard you speak, and then I
liked how you stared at me the whole time.
Thank you. People hearing this will have to take your word for it. Yesterday, after you spoke in Code Pink at an event, I went and told my mom and my aunt, and they said they didn't know about the history of Mother's Day. I thought it was just a Hallmark event.
Oh, yeah.
But this is an important occasion that brings you here to D.C.
Yes. It's the day that mothers decided to coalesce their combined power, which I hope to do again every Mother's Day, and that's what I'm calling for. You know, next Mother's Day, this was like, you know, the place where mothers will come together to transform everything that needs to be transformed. And we know how to do it. And we know how to do it cheap. Way cheaper than these friggin' nutcases they got running stuff. And I've sort of implemented, or I've thought of the structure of a society that would enable utopia. And it's just time for all of us to start talking about utopia. What is it? What does it look like? How would it work? Because everybody is just lost in these little boxes where they repeat the program over and over that they've been fed their entire lives, usually through religion. It's a brainwashing thing. And they just stay inside the problem, regurgitating what they've been told to think and say. But this is outside all boxes. It's a new world where we will actually remake the world from hell that we've allowed it to be come into heaven. And we can do it. And I think the first step of doing it is, well, we have to know what does it look like. We have to have visions of it. We have to have visionaries who talk about it. We have to talk about it like it's a real and possible thing, because it is. It is. So
lastly, Roseanne,
that to me, that's really about all that stuff is my Mother's Day thing, because it's like, wow, women taking power, mothers taking power. It's like the ultimate of, it's the solution to everything.
Lastly, Roseanne Barr, you're standing on your soapbox.
Yes.
A box with the word soap on it.
Yes.
Can you talk about the media? That's you've been in and around both corporate media and KPFK. And now you're standing on a soapbox to get the message out.
That's correct. That is correct, and because that is the only way, the only method I have of saying anything that I said here today. Anything about solutions, anything about the pedophile priesthood and war as a business, and women propping all of that up because of their basically being afraid or drugged. Those are not things that you can find on any media at all. And I did try. I thought that I was famous or whatever it is, powerful enough or whatever it is, view worthy or whatever, to say these things. But these things are just not interesting to people. Like the fact that if I would say that, you know, Chernobyl is the equivalent of 16 nuclear wars, and it's already happened, the war that all the peace people are going around saying they're going to prevent, it already happened. And but you can't tell people that because they just simply don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear that, you know, they're going to privatize water, drinking water. And, you know, they don't want to hear about Haiti. They don't want to hear about oil spills. They don't want to hear anything. That's a bummer. So, you know, the most thing that they don't want to hear about in corporate media and in all its forms, they don't want to hear anything feminist at all. And they pretty much think that they silenced that one, and they pretty much did. But I like being in the park on a soapbox. But, I mean, it might as well, because to me the real joy isn't even the speaking it thing, although I do get a great joy from speaking it and speaking it in public, because I think it needs to be out there. But the great joy for me comes in the thinking it up. I just love it that, you know, I sit there and I have ideas that are original. It's like awesome. And the energy that flows through me when I get an original idea, it just, like, all the hairs on my body stand up, you know, and I just feel that I'm in the zone, and it's a high. It's a great high that never dissipates.
Rosanarchy.
Yes, the Rosanarchy. That's the new wave. That's what I'm calling it. The new age. The Rosanarchy. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Roseanne Barr.
Hey, thanks for talking to me.
That was Roseanne Barr. I spoke with her Mother's Day weekend 2010. She's now a candidate for president on the Green Party ticket. Another presidential candidate you may not have heard of is Rocky Anderson, the former mayor of Salt Lake City, who was an outspoken critic of the Bush administration. Anderson is running on the ticket of the newly created Justice Party. In December, I caught up with Rocky Anderson at Occupy DC at McPherson Square. Your name?
Rocky Anderson.
What brings you to Occupy DC?
Well, I've been here a couple of times. I was here October 6th through the 9th at Freedom Plaza when that got kicked off. And I'm thrilled to be here right now. I'm in Washington, D.C., actually, for the announcement of the formation of the Justice Party, a new party that we've started. It's going to be a major political party, and I think the conditions are absolutely ripe in this country. People across the board want to see change. They want to see not only change in terms of the parties and the people in office, they want to see a change in the system.
As a former mayor of Salt Lake City, as a Democrat, what made you leave the Democratic Party?
Well, Democratic Party is as much of the problem as the Republican Party now. President Obama, when he was running in the last election, took more money from Wall Street than any other person running for president, history of this country, and it shows. It was a really great investment for them. He's surrounded by Goldman Sachs alumni, these people that go through that revolving door, they'll go back to Wall Street and make millions and millions more money. And not one person has been prosecuted for the massive financial fraud that has brought this country to its economic knees and much of the rest of the world. People are getting away with this with impunity, and it's got to stop. When you see the impacts on people, pension plans, all anybody has to do is look at what's happened with their pensions, with their 401k plans. We've all been hurt so badly, except for that little narrow privileged class that's getting away with it, and they're still benefiting. They're still paying out these enormous bonuses, and it's because they got taxpayer bailouts when the rest of us are having a hard time paying mortgages, so many people being thrown out of their homes, so many young people with these massive college loan debts, and so many other people not even being able to afford to go to college anymore. So we've got to stop this enormous class differential. It's the greatest economic disparity in this country since the 1920s. We are in a new gilded age, and it's got to stop. And it's not only got to stop on the economic level, it's got to stop in terms of our two-tiered system of justice, where we have this narrow class of rich and powerful people who also are not held according to the law. They're not accountable. whether for war crimes, whether for this massive economic fraud that's taken place, the telecom companies that were involved in the illegal surveillance on American citizens. Congress gets together after these three telecom companies put $12 million into lobbyists, and Congress grants them by legislation retroactive immunity. The rest of us don't get that any more than the rest of us like the war criminals. President Obama says, as soon as he comes into office, well, we're going to look forward, not backwards, and let him off the hook. Try stealing a loaf of bread and telling that to the judge and the jury.
Rocky Anderson, I think I first learned of you about issues of global warming and the talks in South Africa right now. The U.S. has been one of the main impediments towards an agreement being reached. It hasn't received a lot of coverage, but your thoughts on that?
President Obama promised us action on climate change. It is the greatest problem facing our planet. We know that. The consequences for later generations are going to be enormous. And we don't get to wait until those consequences are being felt. We've got to take action now. And we are seeing consequences now, of course. And it's picking up steam rapidly. We're seeing consequences all over the world. Rising oceans, melting glaciers. We're seeing impacts on water supplies all across the globe with consequences that are just the tip of the iceberg, metaphorically speaking, of course. But we've had such a vacuum of leadership from the United States, whose leadership is absolutely crucial if we're going to see a solution to this global problem. And we know that neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party are ever going to step up and assume that leadership role. And it's because we have such a corrupt system that the fossil fuel industry has its way with the Congress and with the White House. So it's just like, why don't we have universal health care like the entire rest of the industrialized world? Because of the impact in Congress and in the White House of the insurance and medical industry. So the fossil fuel industry, they have their way. We're going to see President Obama, if he's reelected, we're going to see him approve that Keystone pipeline across our country. I don't think there's any doubt of it. It's exactly how he's conducted himself these last 3 years, and we're going to just see the situation get worse rather than better. We need leadership that will stand up for the public interest, and we need leadership that will help bring about an entirely different system, getting the corrupting influence of corporate and other concentrated wealth out of our government.
Do you think your message will resonate with Democrats?
I think Democrats are going to understand they've been betrayed. The public as an entirety has been betrayed. Republicans have been betrayed. My parents were lifetime Republicans. They would not have anything to do with the nuttiness in this Republican Party right now. I mean, look at people like Mitt Romney. He used to be a fairly moderate, reasonable guy. Look what he has had to do to transform himself to please those people that are going to determine whether he gets the nomination. That's what we're seeing in both of these parties, and it's because of so much corruption in the system where our government no longer serves the interest of the people.
Do you think you'll be able to get into some of the debates? I know it's the Commission on Presidential Debates has a lockhold on the televised presidential debates. I don't know if you've paid attention to that issue.
Well, I actually just read a book, an excellent book on presidential debates called No Debate, and the title is absolutely appropriate. I learned for the first time after reading that book, the Presidential Debate Commission was formed entirely by the Republican and Democratic parties. They have a stranglehold on it. They hijacked the debates from the League of Women Voters, who used to bring on third-party candidates, who used to set the agenda, set the itinerary, choose the moderators, determine when they were going to be held. And it's so bad now that the candidates will get together, representatives of the two major party candidates. They'll write out a memorandum of understanding. They'll negotiate it out. They hand it to the Presidential Debate Commission, they salute and go out and execute for them. And if you look at the list of corporate sponsors, it's unbelievable. I mean, no wonder they don't want not even a Ross Perot, let alone a Ralph Nader or a Rocky Anderson on the stage with the major party candidates. We've got to demand as a people that the public interest be served in the debate process and no longer allow the Republican-Democratic duopoly to call all the shots. It's so bad that when President Clinton and Bob Dole were opposing each other, President Clinton was way up in the polls. Dole didn't want Perot on the stage. And President Clinton's representative said, okay, we'll give you that. We get to control everything else. And since President Clinton was 17% ahead in the polls, they said, we're only going to have two debates. We're only going to have 90-second responses. And we're going to schedule these two debates against the playoff games for the World Series so as few people as possible could watch it. George Stephanopoulos later admitted to Chris Matthews that they did that because they wanted it to be a non-event because President Clinton was so far ahead in the polls. Now, that may have served his interests, but it certainly didn't serve the public interest.
Thanks for your time. It's cold out here at Occupy DC. Any final thoughts you care to share as you head to Monday, your big announcement?
Now, I just encourage everybody, get involved in the electoral system. I know we feel that we've been betrayed, that the system is broken, but if we're ever going to change the system, we need to come out, join together, organize like every other major social progress movement in this country, where they started at the grassroots, people organized and changed this country. We can do it again. We've seen it in our nation's history. We can't bow out of the electoral process. We have to join together and do whatever we can to change this corrupt, diseased system and bring everybody on board. We shouldn't be excluding anybody. When we say we're the 99%, we need to mean it. We need to bring in mainstream Republicans that are sick to death of the craziness that's now leading that party so far astray from what it's always stood for. We need to bring Democrats who know that they've been betrayed by the Obama administration and by so many of these timid people in Congress that have forgotten what democratic values really mean.
Thanks, Rocky Anderson.
Thanks a lot.
That was former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson, who's running for president on the Justice Party ticket. Tonight's show was engineered by Mark Taylor. I'm Pete Tucker. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Fight Back. We go out with Wyclef Jean's If I Was President.
Yeah, election time's coming. Who you gonna vote for? Yeah. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday. Yeah. Assassinated on Saturday. Buried on Sunday. Yeah. They go back to work on Monday. If I was president. If I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor. 'Cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president, I get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. I know some soldiers that sleep but they can't dream, wake up with screams, sounds of M16. So take this medal of honor for your bravery. I wish you the best, kid. You and your family. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. They go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, was president. But the radio won't play this. They call it rebel music. How can you refuse it? Children of Moses, telling children the truth. The truth. It's not all that bling that's diamond. Yeah. Tell them the truth. The truth. Most of y'all wear cubic zirconia. Tell them the truth. the truth, yeah. Your soul is worth more than diamonds. Yeah.
If I was president, all blacks, I had reparation, no segregation. Feed the nation so there's no famine. Muslims use Christians with our whole hands. Every week on the beach, party by the sand. Word up, take trips on Air Force One. Don't need to bring the homeless with no sneaks, the Air Force One. Better schools in the hood, better teachers for the classes. Making money, paying no tax. Find the best scientists, tell them come up with an answer. I want the cure for AIDS and cancer. But I gotta watch my back, snipers on the hill with the steel. Waiting to JFK.
I was president. I get elected on Friday.